Hi, I'm Sharon Brindley. I'm a Yamatji Noongar woman. I live on Bunurong country on the Mornington Peninsula, and my business is Jella Jella. So we started Jella Jella about 6 years ago because I wanted to really get the wording Jella Jella, our language, out there. And that was to honour my nan, who was in the stolen generation and not allowed to use language. Then I registered that, and for about 6 months sat on it thinking, what am I going to do? I knew it was going to be food associated. And then I thought, chocolate, it's a way to get it out there to the world, to include our native ingredients, showcasing them to the world, and especially around the education around place of province and the importance of, buying ethically. And that's how we established getting chocolate. And then we created some tea, and we are looking at a few new products, which will be coated nuts. And we've invested in, well, I invested in a manufacturing company. I started by getting my products manufactured. And in this 6 year period, I've had a growth of doing that and creating 2 ton to now owning the largest female food manufacturing business in Australia, Indigenous, 100% owned. So it's been quite a journey of up and downs, but we do have a few more things in the works for what we want to do, especially inclusive of tourism, training, employment, and education.
And there's not really a manual out there, is there, how to set up an Indigenous food business? Where did you actually
No.
start? Did you map it all out? Which direction you
No.
wanted to go in, or did it just organically happen?
It was all in my head. I had the vision, the long-term vision, which has slowly changed over the years, and but only slightly, as I've learnt, how to be in business and how to grow. It is hard because there is no map. There is no. There's so many things out there for startups, but there isn't enough for when you're beyond the startup and you are manufacturing product and how to invest money wisely in your growth and which things to do first. So it's all been trial and error along the way, meeting some incredible people. My networking is being crucial to the business, whether that be mob or ally, in helping with that growth, finding people that you can trust. But also making sure that I join different groups and surround myself with people who are in that business space so you can, learn organically through them.
And you just mentioned they're networking with other Indigenous businesses across Australia. Is there many mob producing food and bush tucker across the nation?
There are quite a few that are sort of established. A lot of them that I know quite well are at that point where they're happy getting it manufactured by somebody else. So when it comes to the manufacturing, I only really know of one that I know well, and that would be Adam Williams, and he does the coffee and tea. So I do ask him, lots of questions. That's a good thing about mob is you can just ring and have those yarns. Around, should I do this? Can I do that? And know that it's in a trusted space.
You mentioned earlier about celebrating and respecting your nana in this process with setting up your business, Jala Jala. How else do you celebrate Aboriginal culture through your business?
Oh, so that has been through when I first started Kiwi, and that has been through highlighting and having a shop. Where, sorry, just turning my phone on silent, where I can sell others' products. I just won the award for the first ever Indigenous Exporters Award in Victoria, and that was around my advocacy on highlighting Indigenous businesses and making sure that we are in a safe space when it comes to the export journey. So I try and celebrate through there, making sure that we're well educated before we go over. It's a small world, even though it seems so large. And I don't want them sending us because it's a ticker box to the government. I want them sending us because we're ready, which helps us as well as helps the world see our products. I've now, with my new vision, especially where I want that to be situated, will be in the Dandenong Ranges, and that will be celebrating all Indigenous businesses that are in that retail space. By having a retail premise, by having a cafe which will be inclusive of foods. I work on the FIMBA board, so I'm the Victorian director for that, which is highlighting the bush food space, making sure that we're protected when it comes to our bush foods, and we're having a circular economy, so buying from mob, supporting mob, and selling to mob.
So buying to mob, selling to mob, supporting mob. How do you source your ingredients from other mob from around Australia?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky enough that a few of my ingredients come directly from other directors on the FIMBA board. So that makes it nice and easy. But other than that, with our members, so we have a membership. So then we know who's selling and, where we can buy.
Let's talk about exporting. Where do you export to, and where would you like to export to into the future?
Well, with my exporting, I exported to Singapore and Malaysia, and unfortunately, it was with both countries, it was the day before they went into lockdown for COVID. So it didn't land very well. Prior to that, I'd had my food, my chocolates exported over to Singapore for the Tastes of Victoria, with that Indigenous inclusion, which was pretty cool. But other than that, I'd pulled right back because at that point I realized I didn't have the margins because I was getting it manufactured for me. So I pulled right back, had my sights throughout the whole of Australia actually on a chocolate manufacturing company to buy to be able to then produce our own product to export. I was looking at one in Queensland, and then about a month into the 12-month journey, I found one actually 40 minutes up the road here in Cranbourne and purchased that. And so we're just re-establishing that journey. So we went over to Tokyo and Osaka with Austrade. So, and I'm actually leaving tomorrow morning to go back to Tokyo to re-establish those connections there. And off to Gull Foods in January, so heading up to Dubai.
So you mentioned Japan there, heading to Dubai soon as well. What's it like when you go through customs? Do you have chocolate and goods in your luggage? And what do the
I
customs
have
mobs
lots of
say
chocolate in
overseas?
there. I've taken chocolate to many countries now, and actually, because it's a packaged product. It actually is fine going through customs. Most just, like joke about wanting a block, of chocolate on the way through. Like they're all excited when it's chocolate. But in that capacity of taking in my suitcase and declaring it's there's no problem because it's a packaged good.
And tell me about some of the feedback you get from the overseas people you deal with on your products.
Feedback. So Japan was actually surprising. It wasn't one of my target markets. I think through not doing it on my own and just sort of listening to the masses, Singapore was, is the gateway. But in saying that, for me to be individual and sort of stand out and not in, in where everybody wants Singapore as their gateway, I thought, yeah, I'll go to Japan. So I self-funded and went to Japan and was actually really surprised at how much they actually appreciated because we have a premium product. We took over our bonbons, which are all like hand-painted in-house by a chocolatier. And looking around and doing the research, there is nothing like that. So everybody I spoke to were really fascinated by the products. So now this reconnection of going over, because I was very clear with them all that I wanted a relationship before I just go selling you my product because I am selling a piece of me effectively in a way. And if I want it over there, I want it perceived in the right manner. So this going over now and doing the reconnection is learning more about them learning more about me. So out of the five that the main five that I spoke to on the first visit, I'm re-catching up with all five of them. So that's brilliant.
And you just had me there at hand-painted bonbons. Can you tell us more about that? They not only
So
sound
we
delicious, but I'm sure they look very pretty.
Yeah, so the little bonbons are soft-centered chocolates, and the molds are all hand-painted before the chocolate is poured in, and then the fillers. And so it is a process, but that is what makes us sort of stand out in that premium space. And from the get-go, back when I first started, the one thing that I wanted to produce in that chocolate space, other than a bar, was to have my own selection of soft-centered native infused chocolates. So I'm really happy to say we've just finalized, because it was very fussy, finalized the production. So we have a box that'll be launched very soon of native ingredients, all created in-house, critiqued by me many, many times. And hopefully that'll go out to the world really soon. I'll be sending it to all the embassies to really showcase what, our capabilities and capacities as an Indigenous business, what we can actually achieve, so they can sort of start sharing that out and showcasing it a little bit more.
Sending your products out to the different embassies across the world sounds really fabulous in terms of reach.
Well, the ones that I've already sort of connected with. Main focus on that would be Japan. I will be sending some to the Singapore, Malaysia, because one of our clients that we actually manufacture for is a Malaysian Sikh who lives here in Australia, or in Victoria here. And we created a recipe for him for camel milk chocolate. And I'm allowed to mention that because he's very proud of the fact, and so am I, that we actually work together on this product. And so he is setting up a premise in Malaysia. So our chocolates will be going directly from our Jala Jala range, as well as indirectly through a product we create, which is his own brand, The Roux. So our new native products will be definitely going over to the Malaysian embassy.
Now, when it comes to Aboriginal art in Australia, I know there are other overseas countries who really have a fine appreciation for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander art, one being France, for example. Do you find that overseas country and people have more of a thirst for Indigenous foods, our bush tucker products? They have a better understanding than non-Indigenous Australians living in this country.
I think it's definitely growing. As I've grown as a business, I've noticed it's grown in many countries. When we were over in Tokyo, actually, on the last delegation, we were lucky enough to go to the gallery, and they had the First Nations on display, and I knew a couple of them, so that was really exciting. And one of the guys that was with us, it was his auntie, so it was really exciting seeing people in there really appreciating our art. When it comes to the food, I think it's being received in the countries that I'm going to. But my worry is that, there's more lemon myrtle grown in China now than there is here. And so that is one of the things that I'm definitely, behind that place of province, like they do in France and Italy. So we can start really highlighting that it's from here and the benefits, because it's different soils, different properties. And I think that when it comes to labeling, that really needs to be represented within our labeling and our branding. So it calls out all the non-Indigenous who are utilizing native flavors and saying this crap like we support, that they can start becoming undone.
And I'd like to talk and learn more about your tea range. I'm sure they'd have many health benefits as well. Can you take us through what teas you have on offer?
So I've got a few teas. I don't do any personal family recipe teas. I haven't asked for any permission, so I stay clear of that. But with my teas, I focus more on the sleep range. I have, I infuse different things. I've got lemon myrtle, I've got finger lime, I've got cinnamon myrtle. What else do I have in there? Rosella. There's quite a few different flavors in there, but it's not something that I plan on exporting, though. I'm keeping that here just in Australia. I have no plans to export, and my reason for that is because my main key focus was chocolate, and because there's a few deadly businesses that have focused, and their main focus is on tea. So I don't like to compete where I don't need to compete against our own people. I chose a long time ago that my competitors aren't my people. My competitors are the non-Indigenous utilizing our ingredients without utilizing us. So yeah, so tea I just focus on here as an extra add-on to our business. But I have said that to many of the tea companies. There's Bijong Tea as well. That's a lovely young lady who started up, who's doing some great teas. She's using family recipes, which is really cool. So I don't want to take on the likes of that.
And we do know that the world cocoa prices are quite high at the moment. How does this
Ooh.
impact your business, Sharon?
It impacted me massively, actually. Like really, really bad. But in saying that, it was the perfect time to have my own manufacturing, because if I hadn't bought my premise when these prices were increasing, there's no way I would have been able to pay someone to produce product, because the prices were getting to the point where my bars would have been like $17. It fell into place that I had my own, even though it's been a tough battle. It really has, because the prices. We were going through them the other day because we'd had a couple of meetings, and our prices had gone up with one of the companies 117%. And it literally is, I think, and I hope, at its worst. But I hadn't put up our chocolates. I was trying really hard to think of other ways to be able to create product to make money. So we did invest in ourselves and brought a panning machine so we can start coating products like macadamias and showcasing them. We also brought a freeze-drying machine so I can start coating products in that form as well. So just trying to think outside the box so I'm not using like a whole block compared to products where there's another product in it to keep costs down.
You just mentioned there the new freeze drying machine that you've bought. I can tell you one of my favorite chocolates is a strawberry in the center, surrounded by chocolate, like the
Oh, I'm
small
doing
balls. Oh,
that.
they're my favorite. So I'd like to see some of them with some indigenous ingredients. That would be very lovely.
Yeah. We're going to do some taste testing in the new year because we've just developed the bonbon. So we're focusing on that around what to coat them in. Like, do I do a dark chocolate and what flavor that is going to like balance well with the strawberry? But so they both stand out. So when you're tasting the chocolate first, you can taste the native ingredient, but you still get the chocolate. So there's going to be lots of trial and error. I'm going to have to go on some big diet just before consuming all the new, variants that we try.
And speaking of that, what is it like tasting these products before they go out to market? You would just have chocolate all over a table before you, I would imagine.
Yeah, because we make batches, we can make, and we've got that space now, we can make small batch to trial. And then once we've trialed a few, we sit down and we do like a blind taste. And then we go through. There's usually four of us that sit and do that and pick the flavors we like the best. Once we've narrowed it down, because we'll try three or four of in different variants of each native ingredient. Whether that be in a white, a dark, a milk, a combination. And then once we've sort of narrowed it down to two of each, I usually send them to a few businesses that I know, some mob businesses for them to try, as well as some allies, because I kind of need both variants of taste buds, because I find with mob, it's like we need more. And I find with allies, it's like, well, that's perfect. So finding that balance of getting the flavors through, because we use raw ingredient or freeze-dried ingredient. We don't use essence at all. And so making sure that that is present and highlighted is super important.
And I'm sure you make your family very proud of the work that you do in this space, sis.
Yeah, I do. I feel I do. The main people I wanted to make proud are, sadly have passed on. My mum passed away when I was 11, and my nan about 15 years ago. So that is the whole purpose and key of why I actually started. And so I always have to have that in my mind. And sometimes I find it hard to take compliments. I really struggle with that. But sometimes if I do feel like a proud moment and I'm lying in bed, like it just sort of, I speak to them, then or have the thoughts of them. And I just, I get a tear in my eye thinking that they would be really proud. Well, I hope they would be really proud.
And you may or may not have brought a tear to my eye then, speaking about your beautiful family. Sharon Brindley, a proud Yamatji Noongar woman and owner and founder of Jalla Jalla, thank you so much for joining us on NITV Radio today.
Thank you so much.